This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Personal Finance Wednesday. In the future, if your credit card gets stolen, you might be able to deactivate it remotely. That's coming up, Personal Finance Wednesday, 12:39. Right now, the Supreme Court has issued a major ruling involving worker health coverage while President Trump is pushing for the reopening of schools this fall. We're joined by Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He's an economist found online at andrewbush.com. Andy, let's begin with the threat against schools. If they don't reopen, the president is threatening to take away their federal funding. A lot of emphasis here on getting schools back open.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's kind of hard for the president to do that because the president doesn't control the purse strings. Congress does. Keep that in mind. He can make things difficult for him, but he's certainly putting a lot of pressure on these universities through the ICE rule that they're coming up with. And remember that ICE rule was put in place. This is obviously something that they wanted to stop students who were foreign students that were just having one course online that they stayed in the country for an extended period of time. But now what they're trying to do is to make sure that universities do open up and don't just offer only online courses, which would allow all of these international students to be able to stay enrolled in the university and come here.
Balance, of course, health and safety and getting the economy moving here, thinking specifically about elementary and high schools. If those aren't open, that means mom and dad can't go back to work, right? Which makes things challenging economically.
Yeah, and at the press conference they had, I think it was yesterday, talking about that and the ability of younger students to be able to ward off COVID is really interesting. Of course, you made a great point, which is, you know, would they be able to bring that back and give it to their parents, or, you know, will their parents now be able to go to work? I mean, these are really difficult questions to answer, and I think it's really important that schools do reopen. What we found is this online education has not worked very well, and especially in CPS. So I think it would be really good for students to go back to school. So I think that would help their education significantly. One thing I do want to point out about the Supreme Court rulings, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously, we had a ruling on the birth control and another ruling on discrimination for religious schools. Those will help those institutions. But what's fascinating to me is not today. What's fascinating is tomorrow. Tomorrow's the big day because tomorrow the Supreme Court's going to rule on whether or not Trump's accountants and bankers can be subpoenaed for information. And that's what we're going to keep a close eye on because that'll have a direct impact on the election depending on what information comes out from there.
Yeah, it will be big, and obviously we'll have it to you when it breaks here on News Radio. Thank you, Andrew Bush. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Just ahead, the COVID-19 crisis continues to expand nationally. More than 60,000 new coronavirus cases were reported in the U.S. yesterday, a new single-day record. Let's get the latest from Michelle Cortez, a health reporter at Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Michelle, we have this information about so many more cases, even as the number of deaths are going down. Dr. Fauci is concerned. Kind of just bring us up to date on what the federal officials are saying.
Right. Well, there is a split when it comes to federal officials, what exactly you're focusing on. We are seeing this surge of cases. And of course, it happened coming off of the 4th of July weekend. So it might be even a little bit soon to see any kind of an increase that would come from the mixing that we had on the 4th, since it can take a few days for the cases to start infecting people and symptoms to begin and testing to rise. So Dr. Fauci has said that he does expect that we might get to 100,000 cases if we don't do something drastic. On the other hand, we have federal officials who really want to get our economy started and get kids back in school. So there's a tension in where we're going moving forward and how we can balance the need to have economic activity and have our country keep moving forward versus getting this virus under control.
And that, just the cases among the youth, it's been interesting to see how they have spread. California is now reporting a significant spread of new infections among younger people, not necessarily school-aged, but the younger adults.
Yeah, younger adults, absolutely. We're seeing a lot of reports coming out about once we're starting to see some college students getting back to school and athletes coming to start practicing and whatnot. A lot of people are going back to bars and starting eating indoors in restaurants. And it does look like younger people are more inclined to do that, right? The message has gotten out to people who are older, who have other health conditions, that this is on you. You're putting yourself at risk. And we are seeing older people taking more steps to be careful of themselves and less so in the younger populations. And so that, as a result, you're seeing exactly what they're reporting in California, that, you know, 2/3 of cases are in adults aged 44 and younger, and they are less likely to die from this, but they certainly can face very serious disease. They can spread it to other people. And the thing that they're doing is keeping the virus in circulation, which puts everybody at risk for longer periods of time.
Now, is there a chance for herd immunity if you get more of these cases, or is it just too soon to tell? I guess we don't even know whether someone could get reinfected with COVID-19.
You know, Cisco, you're exactly right. There's so many unanswered questions with this. We have to assume, or we are assuming, that there is some degree of protection for most people after an infection. We do see that with other kinds of coronaviruses, usually 3 to 5 years of protection. So there is hope that if you get infected, you will have at least some protection, although that is not firmly rooted in science yet, just more kind of hopeful examples from the past. But then when you talk about herd immunity, you need 60 to 80% of the population to have already had the virus in order to get that. And even in our hardest hit areas, we're not coming anywhere near those numbers. Now, if we don't get success with a vaccine and we continue to reopen, as many people say we have to, the only answer will eventually be herd immunity. That will be, you know, millions and millions of cases and thousands of deaths, you know, perhaps millions of deaths, if we're going to get to those kind of numbers through natural infection.
Talk about the challenge of the vaccine, because I think a lot of people keep saying, well, you know, sometime early next year. I mean, there is a chance that maybe they're not able to develop a vaccine for this.
Right. I mean, again, there's so many questions around the vaccine itself, right? Even if everything works beautifully and it does come to fruition and we do have a vaccine by early next year, there are other challenges for that as well. We are seeing companies and the U.S. government is starting to manufacture some of these vaccines just on spec in case it does work that we will have some. But that doesn't mean that we'll be able to get that product into everybody's arms, you know, within a week or two or even a month, right? There's processes that it has to happen. We don't know how effective it's going to be. Most influenza vaccines are around 50% effective. Hopefully we'll get to higher numbers than that, but we don't know. And then there's also this issue of vaccine resistance in our country. A lot of people aren't willing to get vaccinations. And if this works, we really are going to need everyone to be on board. So even if the vaccine works, which at this point is still a large if, there's huge hurdles to come.
Thank you so much. Good information. Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Legendary apparel brand Brooks Brothers, which was founded in 1818, has filed for bankruptcy. Let's talk about it with Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide. Jan, never good when anyone files for bankruptcy. Is there something in this retail environment maybe more significant about it being Brooks Brothers, though?
This is just the beginning. We had 17 major bankruptcies in retailing last year. We've had 17, counting Brooks Brothers, already this year. That's not counting Acima, who's putting together a filing right now, parent of Ann Taylor, as you probably know. And we'll see more, because when you start seeing solid retailers fail, you know that something bigger is happening in the economy. We've been seeing gradual failing of retailers and closed stores close, but now with COVID, we've put that much more pressure on all the retailers. I mean, number one, who's going to the store to buy anything? Not that many people. Who's buying stuff that you wear from Brooks Brothers when you're sitting home like I am right now in my Lululemon talking to you from my desk? It's just, you know, it just ain't happening. And so you're seeing that extra pressure on people. The casualization was already happening. We knew that. Everybody was running around in Nike and Lululemon. But they were at least wearing real clothes to work in most cases, and now they're not going to work. So it's putting a lot of downward pressure on all these companies. I hate to see Brooks Brothers go. I buy lots of stuff from the Brooks Brothers custom shop, and so do a lot of other people, and have for a long, long time. And it's really an icon. I'm hoping that they can save it, and they'll only close maybe 100 stores out of the 500 or so stores, and they'll be able to keep the thing going in reorganization. But a lot of these retailers are just going to liquidate, and the reorg ones are still facing a really uphill battle until the customer gets back strong into the saddle here. And the customer's coming back at a pretty good pace, but they're not close to where they were last year yet.
No, I don't want to come off as saying that the pandemic is in some way good or anything like that, but we've been seeing a very slow evolution in retail with some of these companies, as you've discussed on this show, just sort of barely hanging on. Does this actually put us in a situation where it will speed up whatever the new normal in retail is going to be?
Boy, if I was just closer, I'd reach over and slap you. I'm telling you, there's anything good about this COVID.
Exactly. However, I'm not trying to say that. I know it sounds like it, but that's not what I mean.
We've seen 10,000 stores close every year for the past few years. Pretty close, right? We thought we would see 10,000 or more close again this year. And now with COVID, we're going to see a lot more than that close. And probably next year, a big push of store closings. So yes, years have become months. We thought this was all going to happen over the next 5 years. Now it's happening right now. We're going to see two or three times the number of bankruptcies we would have seen without COVID. But they're the same companies that probably were going to go broke in the future anyway, or at least have to be reconfigured. So, yes, I think you're right. It is just a washout of companies that were going to get put away by the internet and by the increased competition anyway. I'm not sure Brooks Brothers would have been one of those, though, because it was sort of this staid, but there was a clientele for it business. It could have well made it even without COVID, despite the fact that there's a big transition to online and away from dressier clothes, because somebody stays around, right? There's going to be somebody that sells that. There's going to be a market for it. It's just not as big. But under the COVID environment, there's no market at all. And so people's cash flow has gone to zero, and not gone down by 5 or 10% a year, which is what some of these guys were doing in the past. Eventually, that gets you to bankruptcy, but it doesn't get you to bankruptcy tomorrow.
Yeah, just absolutely crushing, for sure. Thank you. Always good insight from Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide. Just ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday. The future of credit cards. Could you maybe deactivate them remotely if they're stolen? Also, saving for your kids' college.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Chicago police form a new unit as the department deals with a summer of deadly street violence. Supreme Court justices rule on two cases involving religious freedom. It's Personal Finance Wednesday, a look at the likely evolution of credit cards over the next few years. Also on the finance front, strategies to get ahead in paying for your children's college. On Wall Street, the Dow down 34. NASDAQ is up 86, and the S&P up 3 points. Oil is up almost 1%. We have some clouds in some areas of Chicagoland, sunshine in others, and scattered rain off and on possible this afternoon. High of 94 degrees. Right now it's 85 O'Hare, 87 Midway, and 86 degrees downtown. Mayor Lightfoot says she fully backs a plan from Police Superintendent David Brown to create a centralized violent crime unit.
Police brass say the new citywide unit is meant to help guns, saturation, and gang enforcement teams in all five enforcement areas, and the announcement comes after 3 weeks of dozens of people shot during each. Past citywide units sometimes generated complaints of corruption and brutality, but Mayor Lightfoot says that history isn't being ignored here.
Well, I think that the superintendent is very cognizant of the challenges that existed with these groups before, and putting in particular safeguards to make sure that there's proper supervision and accountability. It's much smaller than it's been before. I think at times past, it surged to 400 or more. We're not going that large, but we need the flexibility of a centralized group.
The unit will be designed to react quickly to hotspots. Craig Delamore, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
The Supreme Court has handed down decisions in a pair of cases involving religious freedom.
The Supreme Court earned the Trump administration another victory against Obamacare, allowing it to expand a religious exemption to birth control coverage. It allows more employers to opt out of providing free birth control insurance coverage to women based on religious or moral objections. In another case, the court sided with two Catholic schools, allowing religious institutions protections from discrimination lawsuits brought by employees.
Steve Dorsey, CBS News, Washington.
If you're among the many working remotely, remember you can just ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments. WBBM News Time, 12:33.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are mixed, but no significant movement today. Let's find out what's going on. Michael Palumbo is here, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based here in Chicago. Mike, always good to have you on the show. What do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, good afternoon, Cisco, and thanks again for having me on. You know, it's been pretty much a flat day. It started up, and then the news of United with possible large furloughs kind of put a damper on things, and we're kind of treading water. We keep trying to go up, and every time we do, the S&P sells back off. It's up about 0.1% right now, so pretty much of a nothing burger as far as the entire market. But you know, certainly tech continues to chug along, and the smaller stocks continue to be the ones that struggle.
So are we seeing investors sort of waiting for something, some kind of a trigger to get them to either go higher or lower to buy or sell?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of media outlets are making a big deal about the case, the virus case numbers going up, especially in the Southeast and in Arizona. But the market is not, it's a discounting mechanism. It's far from stupid. The market understands that these are cases, but if they don't turn into hospitalizations and deaths, that it's actually not bad news. And so we've actually been slowly rising in the stock market. We've bounced off of 3,000 as these case numbers have gone up, but the hospitalizations, which is the number we watch the closest, have been still sanguine. So, yeah, investors right now are kind of in a holding pattern, slightly biased to the upside, because things have been kind of optimistically okay. I mean, you wouldn't hear that in some of the media, but it is the case that so far hospitalizations are remaining in check.
So let's talk about the investor, not the person who's just sort of the day trader looking for a quick flip, but the person who is willing to buy and hold for a while. Are there still deals to be had out there? I think everyone's thinking, well, we're way off of those lows, so maybe I need to wait, but hopefully we're not going back to those lows.
Well, I'll tell you, for us personally, we are still long. We've advocated remaining long the entire way up. We started being very, very strongly long in March, and we pulled back a lot of our longs when we hit 3,000 the S&P, just because, you know, the way I trade, you know, if you don't have a perfect picture in things, you don't have to have a position on. So we're much smaller than we normally would be. We expect the market to continue up, and we do think we could hit all-time highs, but that is only if the reopenings continue in pace and that these case counts that are alarming don't turn into hospitalizations and start causing states to go backwards again. Because if that happens, the market will sell off 20 to 30%. So investors need to know that there is a lot of risk here that if the virus gets bad again, we're going to sell off. But so far, like I said, our data, the data we look at, is indicating so far so good.
Thanks so much. Always good insight from Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday. Changes in credit card awards are part of the industry's evolution.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. In this segment, we're putting the spotlight on credit cards and some of the changes expected in the future. We welcome Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com based in New York. Ted, the first thing that I want to talk about, because I want to make sure that we don't forget to talk about it, is the idea of the melt-away credit card. This is still in the future, but tell us what this might look like.
I know, it's one of these stranger-than-fiction things. So there are some researchers at Iowa State University that say that they've come up with the way to create a melt-away credit card. So basically, you can give it a trigger signal remotely to basically self-destruct. So, you know, if you forget your card at the bar or something and, you know, you want to make sure nobody else uses it, you can just hit the remote signal and the card melts away and no fraud. It definitely sounds like a James Bond kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds kind of fun, but the whole point is less fraud. That's what just about all of the evolution in credit card technology is about. We're seeing chips in every card, it seems, nowadays. We can expect more of that as well.
The chips are really good at deterring fraud in person, and that's why a lot of the fraud has gone online, where the chips are not helpful. Also, gas stations got an extension. Initially, it was a five-year extension from 2015 to 2020. They're still using swipe cards in many cases, which are less secure. Because of the pandemic, that's been kicked down the road again. So now the new deadline is the spring of 2021. So we definitely need to watch out for fraud online and at gas stations.
What about the mobile wallet? I've noticed more places I can literally just hold up my phone and I don't have to take my credit card or debit card out at all.
That's a trend that's here to stay. That's actually being accelerated by the pandemic because it's really germ-friendly. You don't have to touch anything. And a lot of people are worried about that these days. So it's very commonplace to pay with your phone right now. People like it. People are trying it for the first time because of the pandemic. Even though it's been around a while, people were kind of slow to adopt it. But a lot of people are trying it for the first time. They're liking it. That creates a habit. I think we'll see a lot more mobile payments in the future.
So that's an evolution in regard to trying to stem fraud. What about just the rewards? I'm thinking travel cards, maybe they're not as attractive as fewer people are traveling.
I still think travel cards will bounce back once the virus abates and travel resumes again. That's a really tight relationship between the credit card companies and the travel organizations. American Express and Delta, for example, have a relationship that's worth close to $10 billion annually. And they all do it, United and Chase, Citi and American. So I think that travel and credit cards will remain intertwined. I think for the short term, though, these card companies will continue to lean into the current spending habit. So that means more rewards for groceries, home improvements, streaming services. They're trying to tide people over right now, but I think there will be a lot of pent-up demand for travel once it's safe to do so.
Does this make the rewards cards that offer more flexibility, not just airline miles, does that make them more attractive because you can use the rewards in different places?
It does. I think that's a great tip in all climates, but especially nowadays, keeping your options open. These transferable points cards, like if you get Chase points or American Express points that you can transfer to a dozen different airline partners or potentially use them at hotels or even for cash back or merchandise. Diversification is good with credit cards, just like it's good for your investments. And a lot of these travel cards have also added enhanced cash back returns during the pandemic. So you could turn in your Chase Sapphire Reserve points for that same elevated valuation that used to be reserved just for travel. Now you can also do it for other things like home improvements, groceries. I think that's been a smart move.
Thanks so much, Ted Rossman, an industry analyst at creditcards.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, a second dose of Personal Finance Wednesday, getting a running start on saving for college.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Second dose of Personal Finance Wednesday, a sooner than later approach is a key to successfully building a college fund. Let's get some advice. Ed Jurtzen is here, certified financial planner, founder of Engage Wealth Group here in Chicago. Ed, if we had to give someone that first reminder, the top thing that they need to keep in mind about a college fund, what would you say that would be?
Well, the first thing is small continuous contributions have that opportunity to compound for future college attendees. So a little of something is always better than a lot of nothing.
And that little something, should it be in some sort of a fund? It's diversified. Should it be in a variety of places? What does that look like?
Yeah, Cisco, there's a lot of ways to save for college, but state-sponsored 529 plans, like the highly rated Illinois Bright Start program, is one of the most tax-efficient and automatic ways to save.
So give people a little more on that. The 529, why is that a good deal? Why is that something they should look at?
Well, the 529 plan offers a lot of tax incentives. One, for those in Illinois who contribute to the Bright Start program, you get a tax deduction for contributions. And for qualified withdrawals, that money is not only state tax-free, but also federal tax-free. And there are very few investment options out there that offer all of those benefits.
So that's the 529 plan. Another, I guess, account that people have heard about is the Coverdell account. Tell us about that and maybe how that's different or the same. What's that?
Well, again, Congress has come up with a lot of different ways to help people save for college. And so those accounts, the Coverdell and others as well, use tax incentives to try to get people to save. So again, you get contributions on the way or deductions on the way in and tax-free withdrawals on the way out. And so again, as Congress continues to look at the challenges behind college savings, they're not only creating plans in the future, but also today in order to make those incentives last.
So for people who maybe don't want it to be in some sort of a mutual fund or something like that, is there ever a way that just a plain old savings account is a good idea?
Yeah, savings accounts or just regular investments might be okay, but again, they don't offer those tax advantages of the qualified accounts, the 529 and the Coverdell of others. So again, carefully consider the vehicle that you're using to fund for college and make sure it has not only the opportunity to grow, but also has that back-end tax incentives.
A lot of parents say, we'll just take out a home equity loan in order to do it. Is that a good idea to take on that kind of debt?
Yeah, I'd caution parents against taking out a home equity line or co-signing even for college loans, just because of the fact that, again, you lose those tax incentives, and you want to make sure, especially from a home equity line of credit, you want that to be a lifeline and not a potential noose for the future.
All right, good advice. Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of Engage Wealth Group. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.